is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon.
At this time of year, many Americans are making plans for the holidays and for food. We see no need for people to alter those plans or their eating habits or to do anything but have a happy and healthy holiday season. I plan to serve beef for my Christmas dinner.
Agriculture Secretary Ann Veneman shares her holiday dinner plans this week. Despite news of one certified case of mad cow disease in Washington state, Dan Shore is off this week. So joining us to review the week's news is Rich Lowry, editor of National Review Magazine. Rich, thanks very much for being back with us.
Good morning, Scott.
This is beef from a Holstein cow in Washington state that has tested positive for mad cow. Several countries have already imposed a temporary ban on U.S. beef, and beef prices have dropped significantly. What do we make of this right now? How bad could this be?
Well, it's already pretty bad. We don't know whether this is going to be an isolated case. It probably isn't. And it's devastating news for rural America. We've already, for the time being, lost the export market for beef, which is about worth about $3 billion a year. If there's a more extensive testing system instituted, as there probably will be, there'll be considerable pressure for that. That's going to be another a couple hundred million dollars a year. So this is devastating news for rural America. The winners are probably Brazil, which is already a growing exporter and is going to have more opportunities for growth because of this, and probably also vegetarianism.
How real is this fear, and should it be in the minds of Americans, in the bellies of Americans?
Sure, you're very unlikely to get sick from this, but I think just the general aurora of the story, you know, it doesn't take learning very much about what may be in your bologna to prompt mm-hmm. twinges of vegetarianism, even in the most committed carnivore. Yeah. So probably a pretty good week for tofu and a terrible week for rural America.
As we sit here, of course, we remain on orange or high alert for terrorist attacks. Now, on Christmas Eve, there were three Air France flights between Paris and Los Angeles canceled because of security concerns. Some French officials interviewed suggested this might have been a rover overreaction. U.S. officials say that, in fact, there were still some people they wanted to talk about, wanted to talk to. How difficult is it to measure the success of thwarting terrorist attacks?
It's very difficult because unless you catch someone literally in the act, which you aren't going to do very often, these okay. cases are always going to be very murky. Now, we have this higher alert because of a lot of so-called chatter in the system. And who knew chatter would become such an ominous word? But it has in the post-September 11th world. And in this particular case, not surprisingly, we have a dispute between the U.S. government and the French government, which isn't exactly something new or unexpected. Mm-hmm. As far as I'm concerned, I would think any time you have a suggestion of someone with some flight training and with connections with Al-Qaeda, as we did in this case, that sort of ipso facto makes it something worth taking very seriously.
Mm-hmm. It's been pointed out the French, contrary to the impression we might have in the United States, are pretty hard-nosed when it comes to investigations of terrorist groups.
Generally they are, and they were taking the threat of Islamist terrorism much more seriously than we were much earlier because they had these terrible Paris subway bombings in the 1990s. And they're generally pretty good at tracking these people.
Let's look now at Pakistan. President Musharraf there has survived two attempts on his life in just 11 days. Pakistani security officials say that they are pretty much convinced their investigation is leading them to foreign sources and have more or less suggested the Al-Qaeda terror network. How much does U.S. policy have invested in President Musharraf?
A fair amount, but it's a very difficult case. I mean, since September 11th, Pakistan has been in a stiff competition with Saudi Arabia over which country could be the most dubious ally of the United States. And Musharraf, I think, has been playing a very complicated game where he's basically been trying to straddle between us and the Islamists in his own country, who are very strong. So as a result, he's done very little to crack down on these madrasas, the schools that turn out Islamic radicals, done very little to stop radicals from his country infiltrating into Afghanistan and Kashmir. And it may be that these assassination attempts were really rather extraordinary. It seems as though every time he gets in his motorcade, he risks having an attack on him. It may be that they really shock him into cracking down much more seriously, which would be a very good effect.
Other story this week, in many ways even more significant, from Pakistan. Scientist Abdul Qadir Khan, who was considered, in a sense, the I almost called him the Sakharov. That would entail some other implications. The creator of Pakistan's atomic bomb probably passed important nuclear secrets to Iran and North Korea over the last decade. Could this be an indication that there are more revelations to come?
I would say there are probably always a chance of more revelations from Pakistan in ways that aren't good. And look, it's just an amazing thing. The father of the nuclear bomb in Pakistan is an Islamist. And the only question now is whether this was just a few isolated scientists making these transfers, which is a little difficult to believe, or whether it was government policy. And I think it was probably the latter. And unfortunately, when we talk about Pakistan, it's always safest to believe the worst about what's happening there.
Turning to this country, President Bush is planning to propose significant changes in immigration laws that would help a large number of undocumented workers, as the phrase now in the United States, maintain and find work legally. What's the implication of this legislation, and why is it coming about now?
This is really a 2004 election story. Karl Rove, who is formulating this policy, is a firm believer that Bush must and can win more Hispanic voters, and this is a way to do it. Now, these guest worker programs almost always fail on their own terms. They almost always end up creating more permanent immigration, which is one of the reasons this proposal is going to encounter ferocious opposition from conservatives in Congress and is unlikely to go anywhere.
Mm-hmm. What about organized labor?
Well, organized labor has evolved very much on this issue over the last several years, where they've become much more welcoming of immigration on the theory that they can welcome new immigrants into their ranks and it's a way to get new members. Mm-hmm. The irony is that when you're importing essentially very unskilled workers from Mexico into this country, you're likely to depress wages for workers already here.
We've got a minute and a half left to talk about the campaign on the Democratic side of the ledger. Let me ask you a couple of things. Howard Dean, the apparent Democratic front runner, says that he's going to be talking about God and Jesus Christ. What do you make less of what I'm sure are his deep-seated convictions than the fact that he makes a public declaration? Stay tuned. I'm going to talk about this.
Well, it's really an extraordinary thing, and I think it's a mistake because it broadcasts a certain lack of sincerity when you suggest this is going to be part of your campaign strategy. And I think it's fairly unlikely to work, just because if you looked at the kind of language that Dean used when he was talking about this, he talked about Jesus Christ being an inspiring example, and that's just not the argot of the Bible Belt. Mm-hmm. And the tone of Dean's remarks suggests that Jesus Christ was such a wonderful person because he would have favored the minimum wage, which for evangelical Christians in the South is going to sound like it's missing the point.
Some commentators this week have noted that Senator Kerry of Massachusetts is dropping behind, apparently in public opinion surveys, at least in one survey, behind the Reverend Al Sharpton. Is the story that, or that the Reverend Al Sharpton is moving up?
Well, Sharpton has had, on his own terms, a pretty good campaign. I think it's mostly been about, for him, becoming the most prominent civil rights leader in the country and supplanting Jesse Jackson in that role. And his appearance on Saturday Night Live, which sort of cemented his celebrity status, and now some of his strong poll showings in places like South Carolina are a sign he may be successful in that ambition.
Okay. Rich, nice to talk to you again. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Scott.
Rich Lowry is editor of National Review magazine.